This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Tension continues to mount at the State House over teacher pay and the Public Employee Health Insurance Agency. Thousands of teachers and public service personnel rallied on the Capitol steps over the weekend, demanding change. On last night's episode of the Legislature Today, host Andrea Lanham spoke with Senate President Mitch Carmichael and Senate Minority Leader Roman Prezioso. Here's an excerpt from that interview.
So the House Majority Leader went on to say that the plan passed out of the House, the 2111 plan, compounds to about 10 to 12% of a pay raise each year. And he said that union leaders aren't being truthful with their members. Is that accurate?
Yes, that is accurate. I think that the teachers themselves, the only thing I would take exception with, I think the teachers are wonderful people. I mean, they're doing a great job. They're in our classrooms. They're working. They're diligent. They've dedicated their life, really, to improving the lives of their students. The union bosses, this big labor, backroom dealing shenanigans is where the problem is. And, I know it's, kind of maybe inflammatory language, but these people are inciting protest and, frankly, almost, walkouts on our students. Some of these kids, by the way, won't have food for the weekend. These are the only meals they get are on Thursday and Friday at these schools in which they provide the meals, and they won't even have meals. They're locking the doors because they're not getting enough. And it's not the teachers, it's the union bosses, and they should frankly be ashamed of themselves. We want to do everything we can. We work closely with our colleagues on the other side of the aisle. They have a little bit different view on it, but I believe that we will get to an excellent solution and we'll put this state on a long-term path of growth and prosperity so that we can enhance teacher pay, public employees' pay, and stabilize our insurance issues.
Now, Senator Prezioso, I want to get your reaction
Certainly.
On that as well.
It's totally different. These are not big-time union bosses. The teacher organizations are a conglomeration of teachers and service personnel, the bus drivers and the cooks. They're people that do the job in the school system. I think we can agree on one thing. We have an education crisis. We're not attracting young people to be teachers. The teachers that do graduate in our system are going out of state because the salaries are higher. And the existing teachers that are there, that are doing the great jobs, that have done the great jobs for years, just don't see themselves even breaking even.
So where does that money come from?
It can come from a number of different places. I mean, I can comb through that budget and give you several areas where we can get money. Even in this year's existing governor's budget, the tourism, the commerce, the tax issue with the inventory tax. There's different ways to get that money. We can piecemeal that together. And look what's going to happen with gas. If we don't get on board with gas this year and allow those pipelines to be put in the ground, and they're going to pump millions of cubic feet of gas through here, it's going to be too late then. We need to take action now, and that's our biggest concern.
Well, Senator Carmichael, Where does the dedicated funding stream come from for PEIA? Are we going to look at eliminating initiatives that you had previously mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, I think to my good friend and colleague, Minority Leader Roman Prezioso, I believe that I agree with him 100%. These teachers, people, they're made up of great people. But this aspect of inciting strikes, walkouts, leaving our doors to our schools locked, because for the first year in 4 years, this state has finally going to balance our budget. We've had to take money out of rainy day fund for the last 4 years to balance this budget. As we just begin to turn the corner, there are those who are willing to strike because they're not getting enough. Now, we desperately want to pay the teachers and our public employees more. We're trying to do that, but you can't do it absent a growing economy. And so these initiatives that you speak of, these things like commerce and tourism and those type things, are designed to build an economy that will allow us to grow and prosper. And I think all of us in this room, and hopefully your viewers can agree, this economy in West Virginia has not been prosperous. In fact, we're the 49th in per capita income in America. And so when you look at that and you say this poor state that is just beginning to emerge from these years of economic doldrums, finally scratching, learning to crawl, going to run eventually, is being put in a bind from a strike from our teaching community because they don't get enough of this current pie that we have. We're trying to grow the pie. And I respect my, you know, colleague. He says he can comb through the budget and find these areas. And we will. In fact, we found $30 million to stabilize PEI and make sure that there's no increases to our recipients so that every dollar of increment is additional.
You know, let's look at the PEIA. We're going back to the rainy day fund and take, what, $29 million out of there? What have you solved? You haven't solved anything. Sure, there's not going to be any additional cost in PEIA, but next year, what are we going to do? The teacher's going to come back next year and say, look, the problem is still here. You haven't addressed it. And I think that's the reason the teachers are so frustrated. You know, that they're saying enough is enough. You've got to solve the problem. You can't keep band-aiding the problem and kick it on to next year. You know, they've been told for years, this is your year, this is your year. And their year never comes. And I think it's maxed out to the boiling point right now where total frustration has set in. And, you know, I'm even getting messages from parents, you know, how valuable these teachers are. You know, they do a tremendous job in that classroom. They're not going to let their students go without. They're going to make sure that their classes are funded if they have to take it out of their own pocket. But they've got to make a decent living.
That was the Legislature Today host Andrea Lanham speaking with Senate President Mitch Carmichael and Senate Minority Leader Roman Prezioso. Listen or watch the full interview on our website, wvpublic.org. West Virginia has been getting a lot of attention for the opioid crisis recently, but opioids are not the only drugs or even the deadliest that impact West Virginia. Research shows that tobacco kills more than four times as many West Virginians as opioids. But Carol Lofton reports that passing even moderate laws to limit tobacco use in the state are difficult sells.
Outside of a 4th Avenue bus stop in Huntington, Ronnie Stone is smoking a cigarette. She started when she was 15 and has been smoking for 35 years. She says she's tried to quit about four times, but was only able to last for about a week before the withdrawal symptoms made her light up again.
I've done it for so long, and that it's just that craving. I mean, it's just, I hate how it smells. I hate how it looks. I'm the only smoker in my family. It's an addiction is what it is, and it's an addiction to nicotine.
I told her that the West Virginia legislature is considering a bill that would outlaw smoking in the car with children under the age of 16 and asked her what she thought. She says she fully supports the idea.
They shouldn't have to breathe what our habits are.
Senator Tom DiCubo is a pulmonologist and the lead sponsor of the bill.
I just read an article to the Senate that showed or compared just 5 minutes in a car with someone smoking is the equivalent of the damage and the inhalational injury to the lung that a firefighter would experience 4 to 8 hours of continuous firefighting in a large wildfire.
DiCubo says while it has a lot of support from groups such as the March of Dimes, American Heart Association, and American Lung Association, other members of the legislature, particularly those in the Liberty Caucus, oppose the bill, saying it limits individual freedom. DiCubo, a Republican, says he understands that perspective, but thinks it goes too far in this case.
I'm one of those that believe people have the right to make decisions for themselves, but what I would like to see is for a dramatic decline in smoking. So I'd like to see children growing up without having to suffer effects of shortness of breath and asthma because of their parents' choice.
He says he doesn't know many smokers who like the fact that they smoke and that many have tried to quit but couldn't.
It is very addictive. It's more addictive than heroin in animal models.
At Marshall University, Dr. Brandon Henderson is studying the neuroscience of nicotine addiction.
So we look at specific neurons and regions of the brain that are altered by drugs of abuse.
He says he hopes their research will provide information for future regulations that may help prevent another generation of lifelong smokers.
So when you compare different drugs of abuse, so cocaine, amphetamines, and then compare them to nicotine, there really is a similar change in the amount of dopamine that's released.
Henderson says one of the main differences between nicotine and opioids is that tobacco is a legal drug. Although it has many health impacts, they take a long time to show up. Finally, unlike opioid abuse, culturally, smoking is both prevalent and accepted in much of West Virginia. But changing the culture is difficult. Bills like Tacubo's aim to start small by limiting the exposure of children to secondhand smoke. While Tacubo's bill addresses children's exposure to secondhand smoke, advocates also hope any anti-smoking initiatives go towards changing the culture of smoking acceptance in the state as well. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Carol Lofton.
The Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health, Charleston Area Medical Center, and WVU Medicine. The numbers on the Ohio Valley opioid crisis are grim, especially so in West Virginia, which has the nation's highest rate of overdose deaths. But a deep dive into those numbers might help to bring down the death toll. Aaron Payne sat down with the state's chief health officer to learn how new data analysis shows opportunities to keep people alive.
Imagine having the ability to identify people at risk of drug overdose and then reach them before they die. This was the hope of researchers from the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources when they built a profile from more than 800 fatal overdoses in 2016. Dr. Rahul Gupta is one of the leaders in the state facing the worst of the addiction crisis as commissioner of the DAHR's Bureau for Public Health and state health officer. He says information they gathered helped them identify risk factors and could reach others before it's too late.
Rather than just continue to count numbers, let's start to understand those individuals and their lives as human beings and understand what can we learn from those human beings and what were the specific factors that made them more susceptible to fatal overdoses.
What were some of the factors or categories that you were most interested in looking at?
Did they actually have insurance? What type of insurance? What were their earlier life experiences? Did they call 911? Did EMS respond? Were they given naloxone? Was it appropriately recognized that these people were having an overdose?
And within the results, what was one thing that maybe you found that you did not expect to find?
9 out of 10 of all the decedents had a documented history within the controlled substance monitoring program. That means they received a prescription. In the 30 days prior to their death, nearly half of the women decedents filled a controlled substance prescription, and 36% of the men did the same.
People who died were almost 3 times more likely to have 3 or more prescribers compared to everyone listed in the prescription drug monitoring program. The report also found that opioids were among the 2 most common controlled substance prescriptions filled 12 months prior to death. It also estimates 35 to 54-year-old unmarried males with a high school education or less working a blue-collar occupation as potentially at the highest risk of an overdose. When Gupta looks at those patterns in the numbers, he sees places where an intervention might help, whether it's through the prescribing system, law enforcement, or emergency services. About 70% had used emergency services in the year before their death.
We found that when people called for help, only 31% of decedents had naloxone administration documented. The critical piece to address the problem immediately is to help people at the time of overdose. It's critical to understand that overdose deaths are pretty much preventable. This report helps us take actions and steps necessary to prevent those deaths, but also understand that only can people enter into treatment when we can prevent them from dying.
While the data focuses on West Virginia, are there any lessons within the report that you think could apply to neighboring states?
I certainly think so. I think the work that was done for the fatality report, I think that you're going to find very similar reasons and findings in our neighboring states because as a region, we struggle with same challenges. There's a lot of similarities. While we're divided by boundary lines, we're the same people. We need to learn this particular disorder as a chronic disease, as risk factors. This is one way that we can actually really understand what their lives were about, what were the risks that they suffered that went unrecognized, and use that data to prevent future deaths from happening.
For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Aaron Payne.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills. This is WVPB Charleston, WVBY Beckley, WVBL Bluefield, WVPW Buchanan, WVWV Huntington, WVEP Martinsburg, WVKM Matewan, WVPM Morgantown, WVPG Parkersburg, WVDS Petersburg, WVWS Webster Springs, WVNP Wheeling, and we're online at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Thank you.